This is London. Tonight, London is a city of song and celebration and thanksgiving. There are fireworks and parties. Air raid shelters are as remote as the covered wagon. Many words have been spoken and much drink has been consumed. London has been somewhat hysterical and still is. The organized killing has ended in Europe. The young men of many nations have suffered, sacrificed, and achieved victory. The coming months and years will reveal what will be done with that victory.
That was Edward R. Murrow. The occasion was VE Day, Victory in Europe. The Nazi machine was defeated. The Third Reich was history. Or was it? Our guest today is Jim Mars, investigative reporter and well-known author. And he has a new book out called The Rise of the Fourth Reich. Could this be possible? On the line from Arlington, Texas, Jim Mars. Jim, welcome to the show. And here we have the two conventions out of the way and the first presidential debate about ready to get underway. The political season is here, and the major media is covering it all. Or are they?
That's true. And unfortunately, when you lift the cover and look beneath the surface, we find that they're both run by the same people. Behind Barack Obama is Zbigniew Brzezinski and his son as his advisors, and they, of course, run the Trilateral Commission, which has been trying to get us involved in a war with Russia for some time now. And is also just an offshoot of the more secretive Council on Foreign Relations, but that is covered by John McCain, whose chief advisor is Henry Kissinger, wanted for war crimes in several countries, and the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, the inner core of the Council and the Trilateral Commission and the group known as the Bilderbergs, these are what are self-styled globalists. They are looking at things from a worldwide perspective. And what I've done in my new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich.
By the way, that book is doing really well.
That's true. It's already on the extended New York Times bestseller list, and it's only been on the shelves for just 2 months. So that shows me that people are actually responding to this. And, Jerry, let me tell you why. You, above all people, know this, and I think most of your listeners know, that at least we have the feeling that America has gotten off course. We've somehow taken a wrong turn somewhere. And, for example, I know I was always proud to be an American because we came from the country that stopped wars. We don't start wars. And we prosecuted people at Nuremberg for torturing and killing people. We don't condone that, but oops, now we do. And now we are starting wars. And now the corporations are running the country. And it's like, you know, where do we go wrong? And the problem is, Jerry, that nobody quite knows who to point the finger to. The liberals blame the conservatives. The conservatives blame the liberals. Democrats blame the Republicans and vice versa. And we see a lot of that going on in this election year. The truth of the matter is that the people who lie at the heart of these secret societies and that are largely big moneyed people, Wall Street people, Bank of England people, this is who lies at the heart of the troubles, and these are the same folks who back at the time of World War I created communism in Russia, and then when that threatened to get out of their control, they found a German army intelligence officer an agent, he wasn't an officer, but they put him in charge of a political party of National Socialists, and they created National Socialism, the acronym of which is Nazi, and of course that was Adolf Hitler. So they created Hitler, they funded Hitler before and during the war, and then after World War II, when Germany was defeated, the Nazis were not. They all fled to the rat lines or were brought into the United States under programs like Operation Paperclip and rolled into our military-industrial complex. And, of course, along with their rocket science and their mind control science, we also got their National Socialist philosophy. And this is why I say today that they are turning the once free Republic of the United States into a Fourth Reich.
That's the reason you call the book The Rise of the Fourth Reich. And the reason, and we're going to lay it out here in the show, I know, I've talked to you off air about this over the last couple of years while this book was probably going around in the back of your mind. Your hypothesis or your belief, and actually you lay out the facts pretty well, is that maybe Germany didn't lose the war, they just kind of changed the battleground.
Exactly. Well, the point here is that when I'm talking about Nazis, I'm not necessarily talking about black-suited jackboot marching swastika armbands. I'm talking about people who subscribe to the philosophy of National Socialism, which is socialist programs that can be held within one boundary, economic bloc, or within one nation. And these people were not even Germans to begin with. I point out in detail how that it was the German, how it was the United States plans, the Dawes plan, the Young plan, that pushed conservative Germans into the Nazi party. And it was companies like IBM, General Motors, Ford Motor Company, Standard Oil, who helped Hitler build his Third Reich. The problem was, as voiced by Winston Churchill, they just decided they didn't want Germany leading this this whole new world philosophy, so they mounted the Allied countries against him, and they saw to it that Germany got defeated. But National Socialism did not get defeated. In fact, most of the business, banking, and leaders, business leaders, corporate leaders, went right on with business, because the idea seems to be, particularly under National Socialism, that, hey, business is business, and we don't care who's at war or what the ideology is. So what we see is the same people that helped Hitler start the war were there after the war was over, and they continued their operations, only this time they did it from the United States.
We're going to get into the Bush family before this is over, but right up front, I want to ask you something. Someone told me the other day that George H.W. Bush was given an award in Germany by Henry Kissinger recently.
That's true, just within the past couple of weeks. And he was given a humanitarian award for his efforts in reuniting Germany. And in fact, Henry Kissinger said something to the effect that George Herbert Walker Bush, was the man most responsible for reuniting Germany. And here's the clincher, Jerry. This little hug fest was carried out at a place on the Wannsee, which is a lake there in Germany, and it was, of course, the infamous Wannsee Conference, where the final solution was planned by the Nazis during World War II. And I'm sorry, but I just don't think it was sheer coincidence that they picked that location to honor George Bush.
You and I have talked about this before. It seems a neoconservative movement likes a lot of symbolism and a lot of things that have been done places before in certain dates and certain locations. They like to bring it back.
That's right. In fact, I would go so far as to say when you hear the words neoconservatism, or more popularly neocon, as we hear it quite often in the mainstream media, just simply think National Socialist, because that's what they are. Now, the National Socialists, by the way, subscribe to the old philosophy of the Illuminati. Whether or not they call themselves that or not is immaterial. But they do subscribe to its basic fundamental philosophy, which is the end justifies the means. So, in other words, to accomplish your goals, it's okay to lie, steal, cheat, rob, kill, whatever it takes to achieve the goal. And if you'll look back over the past 8 years, and if you'll look back over some of the events of the past half century in America, you'll find that that same philosophy has been at work. When John F. Kennedy tried to close off the war in Vietnam, when he tried to alter the money-making status of the United States by issuing United States notes through the Treasury and not interest-bearing Federal Reserve notes, and when he tried to curtail the power of the multinational corporations, he was assassinated.
When you wrote that book about the Kennedy assassination, how did you arrive at that so early on? A lot of people have kind of joined you over the years, and you helped lead the path because you laid out the evidence, but you pretty much grappled with that early on.
That's true. I was already in college on a degree plan for a journalism degree, And I was at the University of North Texas, just north of Dallas. I'd been in Dallas many times. My roommates were from Dallas. I had even met Jack Ruby and been in Jack Ruby's club prior to the assassination. And I also knew who was running Dallas and how conservative it was, and very much aware of what was going on, and yet not really part of it. And so when the assassination happened, two things struck me. First off, they were saying that Oswald had used this Italian war rifle, an old bolt-action war rifle that I later found out the Italians had called the humane weapon, because it was notorious to kill anybody with it. But I had bolt-action rifles of my own. I'd been deer hunting and unlike that. And so when everybody was talking about the firing sequence, and they'd said there was one shot, a pause, and then bang, bang, one right on top of each other. And even that weekend, I was puzzled, because I thought, you can't get a bang, bang from a bolt-action rifle. You have to cock the bolt. And so it's a bang, bang, bang. That's as good as you can get with a bolt-action rifle. So when everybody was saying that there were two shots, one on top of each other, I just immediately was going, what's with that? But then I wasn't prepared to think in conspiratorial terms. And so, but then on Sunday morning, when I'm watching television, because they announced they were going to transfer Oswald, and I see on live television Jack Ruby step out and shoot him while he's handcuffed, spread eagle, to two policemen in the basement of the police station, I just began to say, wait a minute, one lone nut shoots the other lone nut? Something's going on here. And so I began to track that case. And, of course, keep up with all the researchers here in Texas, accumulate all the information, and by the late 80s, I realized that I had amassed a massive amount of information that most people had never heard of, and so that's what led to me writing and publishing Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy.
When we talk about the present-day times, this is not not new. This movement, as you mentioned, you went all the way back to World War I there, and I kind of like glossed over the idea that the Nazis or the New World Order or somebody created communism, but that's pretty well accepted.
Yeah, in fact, let me tell you, one of the men. This is how interconnected it all is. Now everybody says, "Oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist," and they act like I'm just making this stuff up. But the facts are the facts. In World War I, the man who was in charge of the war funding for the United States for our effort as part of the Allied Expeditionary Force fighting in World War I was a man by the name of Paul Warburg. Paul Warburg, at that time, was chairman of the Federal Reserve System. But he wasn't an American. He'd come over from Germany. And he was at that meeting at Jekyll Island in 1912, or before, when they planned out and created the Federal Reserve System, a system of privately owned banks who conglomerately create a central bank, something that Americans had always disdained ever since the time of Andrew Jackson, when he did away with the last attempt at a central bank. And so he's running the war effort, Paul Warburg, from America, and his brother, Max Warburg, was running the German war effort. And he was an officer with the Deutsche Bank, the central bank, and interestingly enough, he was also a prominent official with IG Farben, which was the giant multinational chemical drug combine that was one of the largest supporters of Hitler when he began to rise to power. And Max Warburg was also set on the board of directors with America Hamburg ship steamship line, which during the rise of the Nazis and during World War II was pointed out as being the chief source of Nazi spies and Nazi propaganda flowing into the United States. Now, here's the bottom line. With Otto Warburg on the board of directors of the Hamburg American Steamship Line was Prescott Bush, the father of George Herbert Walker Bush and the grandfather of our current president, George W. Bush. And as you mentioned, yes, as it's now well known, established, that in late 1942, Prescott Bush, who was a senator, also a senator from Connecticut, was actually prosecuted by the federal government of the United States under the Trading with the Enemies Act for being nothing but a financial front man for Hitler and the Nazis. And today his grandson is our president.
When we talk about that, a lot of people have heard remotely about that. I guess they decided not to prosecute him completely because Roosevelt intervened because of the war effort or something?
That's a fascinating story, and you'll find this detailed in my new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. Basically, Jerry, in the summer of 1942, when Prescott Bush undoubtedly knew that his business dealings were under scrutiny by the government, he created and founded the United Service Organization, the USO. And Jerry, I know you and I are pretty close to the same age. We all remember the USO and those World War II movies, the USO canteen, and the fact that the USO is so beloved by servicemen all over the world because they bring entertainers. You know, everybody knows Bob Hope went and entered the troops. He did it through the United Service Organization. So, yeah, it was really a very brilliant move, because how could the American government, in the middle of World War II, come out and make a big public deal about the fact that the man who founded the USO was actually a front man for Hitler and the Nazis? It would have been a propaganda disaster. So they fined him, they stripped him of his holdings in Union Banking Corporation, but it was all kind of quietly swept under the rug, and no big deal was made about it.
And you can read about that in the book by Jim Mars, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. Who published this book?
This book was published by William Morrow, a subsidiary of HarperCollins.
So you're back in your old fold.
Yep, back with the main boy.
Well, I guess congratulations are in order. Did they give you any static about publishing this?
There was some contention back and forth.
Now, I don't want you to bite the hand that feeds you here now.
See, they did a very conscientious job of editing, and I was constantly being called into question, but when I provided my sources and when I backed it up and when I clarified certain issues, everything I had to say was in there. So I would say overall they did a magnificent job.
We'll have a lot to discuss here with Jim Mars. We're going to take a break. We're going to get to John McCain before the hour is over, and back to Obama and Biden. Biden's a New World Order guy, right?
Pretty much so, and he certainly has been one of the standard bearers for the war on drugs, which actually started the snowball rolling downhill as far as shredding our civil liberties, and then also bypassing the Posse Comitatus Act, which says the U.S. military cannot be used against the civilian population. And yet, under the rubric of the war on drugs, more and more of the military has come into playing roles in that. And, of course...
Has there been any candidate on either major party that hasn't been in the pocket of these guys?
Only one.
Who was that?
And he became a non-person, even though he raised more money quicker than any of the other candidates, and he was the overwhelming choice of the U.S. military, and that's Congressman Ron Paul.
We'll be back in a moment with Jim Mars. Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And, of course, the views, you know, a picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Marv picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Marv Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally. 928-707-0291. Or visit his website.
MarvelousMarv.com. Real easy, real easy.
Jim Mars is our guest, and we're talking politics, the world situation, the New World Order, conspiracies, you name it. Jim, a lot of people think the word conspiracy is a dirty word, but conspiracies happen every day.
Absolutely. People are still serving time in U.S. prisons convicted of conspiracy. So the idea that there are no conspiracies is totally ludicrous. And my particular thing, because I'm often accused of being a conspiracy theorist, okay? And my response is, you can't say I'm a theorist if I can prove it.
And you feel good about this book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. You, as you mentioned before the break, your editors made sure you had the proof.
Absolutely. Plus, there's also this, and this has held true for both the Kennedy assassination, my investigation into UFOs, my investigation into secret societies. You know, the average guy on the street, it's easy for him to just say, well, I don't believe that. You know, I don't think that's true, which is fine. I don't try to say everybody has to believe what I believe, but belief is not proof, okay? And the thing, Jerry, that has really always kept me going is that all through the years, when I talk to people who know what they're talking about, when I talk to people who were involved in the Kennedy assassination, maybe not in the plot, but certainly involved in it, such as the DeMauro Shields and his wife, Oswald's wife and Oswald's mother, and when I talk to these FBI people that were involved, when I talk to military officers involved with UFOs, when I talk to astronauts who have been involved and had experiences with UFOs, and people who know what they're talking about say, you know, Jim, you're right. This is what's going on. Well, then, you know, I feel like since I devoted myself to being a journalist, I feel like I'm obligated to bring this information to the public. Now, whether you want to believe it or not, that's up to you. But if you don't, you're maybe getting in dangerous grounds because contrary to what we've all heard all our life, what you don't know can hurt you.
You got a good point there. In fact, we might argue about the last three or four election cycles, most people are just not informed anymore.
That's true. And like these re-elections, and then, but let's look at 2004. What a choice we had. You could vote for the Democrat candidate, John Kerry, who was came from an oil family and was a member of the Skull and Bones Secret Society, which means he took an oath to them that superseded any other oath he'd take, such as his presidential oath to defend the Constitution. Or you could vote for his cousin, George W. Bush, the Republican candidate who came from an oil family and was also a member of Skull and Bones Secret Society and took the same oath as John Kerry. How's that for a choice?
You mentioned the common denominator here through recent history, at least, and maybe for the whole 20th century and into the 21st century. The oil business seems to be the place that everybody gets control. In other words, the oil men are running everything.
That's true. Actually, there's two more facets to that. I call it the God Syndicate.
Tell me about that.
Guns, oil, and drugs. Three largest money-making commodities in the world. And when you really peel back the layers, you find that the same people control all three. The same people that own the giant multi-corporations that are getting the benefit of defense contracts are the same people who own the oil companies who are getting rich off of the control and manipulation of prices of gasoline and oil. And then you find that covertly many of these same families, all the way back to the opium wars, have been involved in at least the funding and the flow of money in the drug trade.
When we talk about this, the drug thing is probably the biggest moneymaker, I would suppose.
Absolutely. And let me tell you what you're going to learn in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. Everybody today is very concerned about the wave of increased teen suicides and school shootings. And the cause, the only thing they can talk about is guns. Take away the guns and we'll do this. Well, this is poppycock. I grew up in Texas. Everybody had a gun. We even took guns to school. Nobody ever shot anybody. It's drugs. It's these kids that are on these psychotropic drugs. Every single school shooter, almost without exception, has been either on these mind-altering drugs or had just coming off of them, which apparently in some cases is worse than even going on them. And in my book, I detail about 2.5 pages worth listing these school shootings and showing that in every case you have these psychotropic drugs. Now, why aren't we being told about that? Because by 2007, direct-to-consumer advertising by the giant pharmaceutical corporations had exceeded $3 billion. They are one of, if not the biggest advertiser in this country, and no media, whether it's TV, radio, newspapers, nobody wants to bite the hand that feeds them, and so nobody will talk about the real cause of these school shootings.
It seems to me that that was the overall plan, I guess, when the allow broadcasters, especially, to start charging top rates for different things on the idea that an availability, a commercial, and a higher-rated program shouldn't be given away to the lowest cost per unit.
Even though it is, even though it was up until then considered a public.
Right, right. But so what that did is you ask the average guy on the street, they say, oh, yeah, everybody ought to be able to make some money. But then you look at the unintended or intended consequences. All of a sudden, Uncle Sam, politicians, pharmaceutical companies. Look at all the news cast on the regular networks and the cable networks. Look at all the pharmaceutical ads. And you know, demographically and research-wise, only sick people are not the ones watching the news.
Well, what gets me is they have these ads for drugs that you can't even pronounce and you can't get without a prescription. Why are they advertising them? Because the public goes to the doctor, demands that they get this drug, and the doctor says, well, I don't know if you really need that. No, I saw it on TV. That's the one I want. So they go, oh, well, and they go ahead and prescribe it to them. Well, let me tell you, and I'm sure you lived through this, Jerry, like I have, and so I think you'll agree with me. The control of the media began right after the Kennedy assassination. At the time of the Kennedy assassination in the early to mid-60s, on the TV networks, the news departments were filled with credentialed, educated, and dedicated newsmen and journalists, mostly from the print media. And they were subsidized. The news departments were simply given money by the networks, and they were considered public service.
Yeah, it was required by the FCC at that time.
You had to have, you know, provide some public service. You had newsmen who would gather news and present the news. After Johnson took over and the National Socialists began to infiltrate and turn the republic into the new Reich, they passed more regulations saying, no, you didn't have to do that. And the corporate executive said, we're going to place the news departments not under public service, but under programming. And after that, then they began to be ratings driven. And whoever had the most ratings, you know, could charge the most advertising dollar. And it got to be big business, and it got to be big advertising. Because, Jerry, as well, in primetime TV, for example, when there's a sitcom on, you never get all of the audience. You only get a slice because everybody's watching something else. People's tastes are all different. But when it comes to the 10 o'clock news, everybody's watching. They could charge much more for airtime in the news broadcast than in regular programming, and it became big business, and the newsmen were quickly replaced by personalities. The guy with the nice hairdo, the good-looking lady, the minority person, got to have one of those. And there they were, and they they could be wonderful people, but they did not have the background in journalism and in news reporting that their predecessors had. And this is when news reporting started.
My experience was if you did have a journalistic background, that was not necessarily an asset.
Yeah, they didn't want somebody who knew what was going on. Exactly. And that's why today everybody tunes in the news, but all they're really getting are the press releases and the corporate and government propaganda.
I don't know if it'll ever come back the other way. They're making money this way. I don't know what we're going to. I know what we're going to do about it, but it needs to be changed back.
Exactly. Well, one thing we could do is to pass laws requiring the public media to go back to providing a certain amount of programming in the public.
Of course, you
know, we've got public television, right?
Well, they're bought and paid for by the corporations too now.
All you got to do is look after each program. You see that they're funded by Exxon and Mobil Oil.
In fact, there may not be as much freedom there as there is in commercial broadcasting.
Much less. Ask yourself, if it's truly public television, how come you can't try going down to your public television station and say, well, I'm a member of the public, I don't have a criminal record, and I don't have a mental history record, and I'd like to have 10 minutes of airtime to say some things I want to say. See how far you get.
You got a good point there. You know, we were in the midst of the broadcast conventions, and evidence everywhere, if you watch, of money speaking. The politicians get the best parties by the best corporations. The people who are advertising on these shows make it possible for them to get the propaganda out. They expect something back in return, and then, of course, you have the campaign donations themselves.
Exactly. And And when it's, and it's obviously a conflict of interest when media outlets can make campaign contributions to, and pay for high-powered lobbyists to work on our elected representatives. You can see the conflict of interest there and the problem that can cause. But again, this is all in corporate America. And in fact, the term fascism in the dictionary, look it up, generally it means the blending of government and corporate power, usually fueled by nationalism, okay? And that's, it originally originated under Mussolini, and fascism came from his black-shirted fascistas. But Mussolini, and I quote him in my new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, he said fascism early on is probably not even the right term. He said the more correct term is corporatism. And we certainly have corporatism. In modern America, the corporations have gained control over the government and over the state. Okay? So, but the end result's the same, isn't it?
You got a good point there. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? And it doesn't make any difference. You still have the final product.
That's right.
We'll be right back with Jim Mars, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. I want to get to McCain here next quarter hour. Don't go away.
International law? I better call my lawyer. He didn't bring that up to me.
Hi, this is Rod C. Davis. I have a question. Do you love to travel? Then you need to check out YTB's weekly travel deals and steals. Just go to the Travel Store and More banner, click on the Business and Vacation Travel link, and then sign up for the Deals and Steals newsletter for great deals every week to America's favorite vacation spots. And while you're logged on, you can send flowers to that special person, buy your perfect car, buy tickets to attractions, book an exotic hunting or fishing trip, set up a honeymoon registry, and much more. Just click on the extras link and take advantage of YTB's huge purchasing power that saves you money. And if you'd like to save a lot of money on your travel, then check out the Travel Business Opportunity link and find out how you could earn a commission each and every time that you book a trip. You can be sure that Travelocity, Orbitz, and Expedia won't do that. Click on the banner and bookmark the page for your future use.